This is their president we are talking about. The President of the United States does not serve at the pleasure of the legislature, does not serve at the pleasure of Joe Biden, does not serve at the pleasure of Henry Hyde, does not serve at the pleasure of the Congress, as a prime minister does in a parliamentary system. He is elected directly by the people of the United States of America. And the election of a president is the only nationwide vote the American people will ever cast. And that's a big deal. The American people don't think that they have made a mistake by electing Bill Clinton. And we in Congress had better be very careful before we upset their decision and make darn sure that we are able to convince them, if we decide to upset their decision, that our decision to impeach him was based upon principle and not politics.
Anyone can tell you the news.
Barack, Diamond and Silk.
Mark Zuckerberg will end up and it's going to be a face without the book.
Without the face.
Hey, Megan, how are you?
Now they're chipping away at the normalization of pedophilia, and the left is embracing this type of behavior.
We welcome Dinesh D'Souza.
I know I ticked him off. In a certain sense, it's a giant up yours to Obama, and that's why the left is freaking out over it.
Jack Kennedy and LBJ, Clinton, and the double standard from the left.
Yeah, I love how the left does nothing but push the most bizarre practices down our throats and up our tailpipes.
It takes a real man to tackle the hot issues that really matter.
Michael Hart is the man of this house.
Welcome to the Michael Hart Show.
It is the 26th day of September 2019, the Michael Hart Show, right here on the Heart of America Broadcasting Network. The audio that you heard was Joe Biden in 1998 speaking about the hurdles, the trials, the travesties of an attempted impeachment of a sitting United States president. For political reasons, this is the Of High Crimes and Misdemeanors edition of the program. The Democrat Party is engaged in a relentless and seemingly perpetual effort to impeach President Trump. With each new concocted scandal, the Dems seem, they're screaming the president is impeachable due to his engaging in what is commonly referred to as high crimes and misdemeanors, which the Constitution does not clearly define. However, history has, and in this episode, we take a look at what is commonly accepted as high crimes, the history of them, the origin of the phrase, and most importantly, the attempts by others to redefine the meaning for a political gain and the dangers of doing so. Will the Dems' attempt at impeaching Trump under this phrase be their eventual undoing? We take a look. Also, Megan Barth of Reagan Babe, your calls and this day in history. When the time is right, 929-477-3761. This ain't the time, by the way. This particular episode brought to you by our friends over at, the Land Report, for one thing. Go over to landreport.com if you love land. Also, Liberty One Tech for all your cybersecurity needs, your tech support websites, libertythenumberonetech.com, and, of course, the Unknown America Project. So many of you guys have supported us there. We appreciate that. We appreciate it if you would consider the possibility of supporting us through the Patreon link. Just go over to Heart, H-A-R-T, heartofamerica.net. Click on the Patreon link. Yeah, you got to join Patreon, but they're not going to bug you. I'm not even going to bug you. And for $6.95 a month, you help keep this program on the air. And as our way of saying thank you, we'll even send you a complimentary copy of The Unknown America, Myths and Little Known Oddities About the Greatest Nation on Earth. So much has happened in the last, 2 years, but recently even more so in the last 2 weeks. We've been talking about the impeachment of Brett Kavanaugh, now the whistleblower report, whatever the hell that's supposed to mean. We've got impeachment, impeachment, impeachment. But you know, for those of us that are willing to take a little deeper look into what's going on, I think there is something going on that is much more concerning, at least from the perspective of the left, and what is really taking place within the party. We can get into the whistleblower if you want to. We can get into things related to the various scandals and Russian collusion, et cetera, et cetera. But in the end, it's very important, and that's what this program is dedicated to. It's very important to really get into the weeds from time to time and break things down and get a better idea of what may very well be occurring in this particular government. And I'm going to tell you something. I am quite concerned about it. Not necessarily one of the, you know, we typically talk about the future of America and where we're going and the young people and education and indoctrination. But the Democrats have kind of stepped into a realm that I really think we need to have a more intellectual peek into. And we're going to do that in just a few moments through the words of, well, William Blackstone. Who was he? We'll explain. But first, this day in history. It was on this day in 1789 that George Washington appoints the first cabinet member to the United States government. 1914. The United States Federal Trade Commission is established by the Federal Trade Commission Act. All the way up to 1933, gangster Machine Gun Kelly surrenders to the FBI as he shouts out, "Don't shoot, G-men," which becomes the name for the FBI. G-men, of course, the G stands for government. Also on this particular day, all the way up to 1960, in Chicago, the very first televised debate takes place between presidential candidates Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy. Pretty much all the news which is worth mentioning on this particular day, as we are going to get a little deeper into what is going on in the nation around us. All right, so Trump's coming out. You know, he's been at this, we're talking about climate change and the immigration rally, the fair rally, which is taking place up in D.C. And he made an interesting speech yesterday where he's talking about how there is just this relentless attempt to get him out of office. And I don't know if it was my imagination or not, but he sounded exhausted, if the truth be told. And I think he's pretty much over it. And I believe that much of America is over it as well. But I think it's also important that we get a little bit more instructional in terms of what we're seeing going on in this country today. Because the Democrats have stepped into, like I said a moment ago, a realm that I am not fully certain they understand the implications of. Now, in recent weeks and months, whether it's on this program or social media outlets or whatever the case may be, we keep bumping into the phraseology, high crimes and misdemeanors, and what do they mean? Well, they're not clearly defined in the Constitution, and there's a reason for that. But I think that it really speaks volumes to what is going on in the country today as it relates to the desperation of the left. And let me explain what I'm speaking of here, because as is always the case, and I cannot emphasize this enough, if you want to understand the news of the day, you've got to peer at it through the prism of the past. That is mandatory. And if you don't grasp the concept of what we're trying to promote and project here at Heart of America, then this explanation might fall a little flat for you. But it's also important to look at the creation of the Constitution through the fabric of the time. There was certain phrases in the Constitution which don't necessarily mean today what they meant then. But there was also some assumptions that the founding fathers made. And one of those assumptions was that the country, although not necessarily and purposely and overtly founded as a Christian nation, it was definitely founded on Christian Judeo ideologies. And the founding fathers were very in tune to the idea that certain things would just be assumed. And one of the assumptions that they had was the phrase high crimes and misdemeanors. But before we get into exactly what that means, it's important to understand where they drew much of their ideas from. Because there seems to be this notion that the founding fathers, by way of the Constitution, were completely rejecting everything from England. And that is simply not true. they were filtering out what they consider to be the oppressive aspects, and that had to do with religion in part. It had to do with commerce. Commerce was a big part of this, folks. As a matter of fact, you know, it was actually the Commerce Clause, there was two or three of them, but the Commerce Clause of the 1700s that was issued by King George III, which was the real impetus for the Revolutionary War and our demand for independence. But there was also a lot of tenets that they brought forward out of their time in Europe, their time, of course, in England, and even other parts of the country, other parts of the world, rather. But one of the things we have to understand is look at the teachings of Sir William Blackstone. Now, he was an English jurist, a judge, and a politician of the 18th century, and is most noted what's called the for writing the commentaries on the law of England. Now, Blackstone's writings and the commentaries on the law of England are very significant, as they are a very influential 18th century treatise on the common law of England by Sir William Blackstone, originally published through the years of 1765 and 1770. Now, the works are divided into four different volumes on the rights of persons, the rights of things, of private wrongs, and public wrongs as well. These commentaries were long regarded as the leading work on the development of English law and played a very significant role in the development of the American legal system. They were, in fact, the first methodical treatises on the common law suitable for a lay readership since at least the Middle Ages. In other words, Blackstone was breaking down the law of the day, the English law of the day, so the common lay person could understand it. Now, the commentaries are often quoted as the definitive pre-revolutionary source of common law by United States courts. Opinions of the Supreme Court quoted from Blackstone's work whenever they wish to engage in historical discussion that goes back that far, or even further for that matter, when discussing the intent of the framers of the Constitution. And even people like Benedict Arnold even used it to communicate secretly with his conspirator John Andre during their plot to betray the Continental Army during the American Revolution. The reason Blackstone is important to the conversation is that at this period in time, high crimes and misdemeanors was more clearly defined. The reason it appears in the Constitution as high crimes and misdemeanors was when the founding fathers penned that particular phraseology, they understood what they were saying. They assumed we would understand what they were saying. But it's also important to go even further back in history. For example, when Rufus King reported to his home state of Massachusetts on the work of the Constitutional Convention, to which he was a delegate, he said, quote, that it was the intention and honest desire of the convention to use those expressions that were most easy to understand and the least equivocal in their meaning. Among them, the phrase high crimes and misdemeanors as used in the impeachment provision of the Constitution. The use of these words in English impeachment stretched all the way back to 1386 when George Mason suggested them to the convention. They were readily accepted because they were a term that was very familiar to all of those in attendance. There was no debate. High crimes and misdemeanors was something that they understood. But there was a sense of fluidity here that is being exploited to this day. And I fear, and I do fear, that it may cause the demise of the Democrat Party. But what was clear and unequivocal to the founders has been to subsequent generations a matter of much confusion. In his Senate speech Thursday in defense of the president, former Dale Bumpers mistakenly asserted that the crimes for which President Clinton, is obviously going back to the Clinton administration, had been impeached don't rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors. So a little bit of history is in order for us to unpack what's going on and the potential threat that it has to the future of America. The very first impeachment along the lines of the procedure of high crimes and misdemeanors was actually against a guy by the name of Michael de la Pole in 1386. You wouldn't think that we would have to go back to that particular time in European history to bring forth exactly what's going on in this country today, but we do. From that time until the 17th century, high crimes and misdemeanors was used to include common law offenses as well as other charges that were more clearly political in nature. Now, listen to some of these. They included advising the king to grant liberties and privileges to certain persons to the hindrance of the due execution of laws. Now, what we're being told here is pardons. Think about that for just a moment. Even back in that day, if somebody were to lobby the king to release somebody to grant liberties and privileges to certain persons to the hindrance of the due execution of law, that was considered a high crime or misdemeanor in that period of time. Yet it's relatively commonplace today. In addition to that, procuring offices for persons who were unfit and unworthy of them. Yes. In this period in time, if the king was to appoint somebody to a certain level of authority and that person considered unfit, they're not talking about mentally unfit. They're talking about unqualified. Securing offices for persons who were unfit and unworthy, also squandering away the public treasure. Now, this could refer to the building of temples. It could be referring to redecorating Parliament for that matter. In addition to that, from the earliest cases to the impeachment of Warren Hastings that was occurring at the same time as the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, high crimes and misdemeanors continued to be a common charge in impeachments. In the mid-17th century, the notion of what constituted high crimes and misdemeanors was expanded. Now listen to this, expanded to include such things as negligence and improprieties while in office. Chief Justice William Scroggs, for example, was impeached in 1680 for, among other things, browbeating witnesses, cursing, and drinking. Let that sink in for just a moment while I enjoy my lovely cup of Colombian coffee. But most notably here, isn't just the excessive drinking, but also the term expanded to include, and generally bringing, listen to this, the highest scandal on the public office of the kingdom. By the 18th century, impeachable offenses under this rubric of high crimes and misdemeanors weren't limited to indictable crimes in common law, but also included more purely political offenses. In 1701, the Earl of Oxford was charged with a violation, this is a quote, violation of his duty and trust. Warren Hastings, the Governor General of India, was charged with maladministration, corruption in office, and cruelty. Any of these sound familiar? Any of these sound more modern? For those that wrote and ratified the Constitution, the most dominant source of authority on common law was William Blackstone's Commentaries on the Law of England, which James Madison described as, quote, a book which is in every man's hand. Now, Blackstone, for which much of the modern judicial system is based upon, made clear that the high misdemeanors under common law, the first and principal one was the maladministration of high office, are in public trust and employment, and is usually punished by the method of parliamentary impeachment, wherein such penalties, short of death, are inflicted as to the wisdom of the House of Peers shall seem proper, consistent usually of banishment, imprisonment, fines, or disability. Included in two of the offenses of Blackstone, the special relevance to the Clinton case, for example, one is the obstructing of execution of lawless process, is at times an offense of very high and presumptuous nature. Such obstructions of public justice, he argues, can be both of the civil and criminal kind, although his primary challenge is of the obstruction of an arrest upon a criminal process. The offense clearly isn't limited to that and seems to include any effort to keep the process of the law from functioning properly. The second offense, and we'll get through this, and I want to give you my thoughts on it. The second offense of some significance to the matter at hand is, quote, the crime of willful and corrupt perjury and the closely related crime of the subordinated of perjury, which is the offense of procuring another to take or make such a false oath as constitutes perjury in the principal. Blackstone found perjury and subordination of perjury to be what he called detestable crimes, although at such a point that offenses were punishable by death, by the time of the commentaries, they had become punishable by up to 6 months imprisonment. Also, fine or to have both, could have been nailed to the pillory, believe it or not. And in the descending order of gravity that Blackstone sets up, it's striking that perjury is followed immediately by the crime of bribery, one of the two impeachable offenses listed explicitly in the Constitution. And so the moral and legal inheritance of the founders included the belief that the violations of an oath of office, in Algernon Sidney's word, nothing less than treachery. We're going to stop right there because we're going to get deeper and deeper and deeper into this. But the reason I'm bringing this up is that high crimes and misdemeanors by many people is thought to be a crime or a felony or a misdemeanor in sense of common law. In other words, the legal system, breaking of an established law. Whereas in the early days of the writings of Blackstone and others, dating all the way back to the 1300s, anything that was a high crime or misdemeanor could in fact be political in nature. It could be a body of politicians losing faith, or again, squandering of treasures, or again, advising the king or the president in this case in matters that the president alone supposedly should be the one making the decision on. The reason that I bring this up and the reason it causes concern for me is I, first off, severely doubt that the Democrat Party has investigated the teachings of William Blackstone and the origins of high crimes and misdemeanors. But in a more concerning sense, the existence of high crimes and misdemeanors throughout history, in this case, in the neighborhood of 500 years, there seems to be a idea of expanding what the term means to accommodate the viewpoints of the day. Now, people talk all the time about how solid and in rock and stone the Constitution is. Well, that's simply not true, gang. If it was, we wouldn't have an amendment process. Now, although this might sound as though that this is a little concerning for Trump, that wouldn't be the case necessarily. Because what happens now under the auspices of high crimes and misdemeanors, the burden of convincing the American public of what a high crime or misdemeanor is falls on the shoulders of the Democrats. The overwhelming majority of Americans, I mean the overwhelming majority, believes the terms crimes, misdemeanors, or if you want to supplant crimes and felonies, I'll allow you the license, but that in fact we're talking about a law on the books that has been practiced for however long it's been practiced that must be broken or violated for the purposes of bringing an impeachment hearing. At the end of the day, they can impeach anything, and throughout history have proven their desire and willingness to do so. Now, here's where it gets dicey. The Democrat Party has demonstrated an amazing concern for 2020 and the future. There is a measure of desperation here that I do not recall in my lifetime, and I'm over a half a century old. In order to get Donald Trump on treachery, treason, malfeasance, squandering of assets, taking undue advice, or whatever the crime du jour must be of that day. The Democrats have got to sell the American public. Now, I realize that all impeachment proceedings originate in the House. And then, of course, they go off to the Senate for full vote on removal. Every single member of the House of Representatives is up for re-election in 2020. And even ones that are from staunchly Democrat districts, there is an enormous amount of resistance and a very big distaste for exactly what impeachment might look like. People simply do not want to deal with it. They realize that the scope of being a national security issue, for example, the disruption of trade, it would bombard the stock market. And so the list goes on and on and on to the potential downsides of it all. So the Democrats, in order to achieve, and they never will, they will not succeed. This really is a matter of grandstanding. It's a matter of optics, a matter of propaganda, if you will. They will continue to level charges, whether it's whistleblower or Kavanaugh or Russians or whatever, for the propagandized optic of doing something in the face of no policy initiatives that would make Americans happier, better off. But here's the danger. If the Democrats were to employ the observations of William Blackstone and change the rules, so to speak, of what is impeachable, going so far as to redefine treason, or treason, or any of the other commonly accepted phraseologies of the time, then they have to sell the House of Representatives that are all up for re-election. Then they have to sell the Senate, but first they have to sell us, because we will vote these guys and gals out of office, and they know it. There is a measure of desperation here that is hard to grapple with or even grasp its extent. Why? Because if they were successful in taking the current administration's behavior, whether it's personal to Trump or it's even his administration, and they were successful in bringing in articles of impeachment and did in fact get the vote in the House, which is possible pre-2020, then what you have here is a precedent, because Blackstone spoke frequently about precedent. The Democrats are so desperate, so unbelievably concerned about 2020, that they are looking to lower the bar of what high crimes and misdemeanors are to get Donald Trump without considering the future, that bar now being lowered and now being designated as a legal precedent could be employed against them, first off, immediately, and for generations to come. Essentially, what I'm saying to you is the Democrats are embarking on a campaign of high crimes and misdemeanors can be deemed, we don't like you. We don't trust you. How often are they talking about Donald Trump being a bigot and a xenophobe? People back in the 1600s were impeached for cruelty and berating witnesses in a courtroom. Now, do we really want to step into those muddy waters? The Democrats understand, or at least I would hope that they do, that by redefining high crimes and misdemeanors to fit the commonly accepted behaviors of the days, the mores of the days, as justification for the removal of a duly elected president, they expose their party to the exact same of retaliatory effort for the foreseeable future, as well as anybody sitting in the House or Senate, or even at the most local level, because impeachment is not restricted to the presidency alone. Now, take this to an ultimate extreme, and consider the definition or the redefining of high crimes and misdemeanors in a more localized sense. Your personal rights and liberties. How almost anything deemed a violation or a sedition against the state, whether it's your home state as it is or the United States of America, could be deemed a crime and or misdemeanor punishable by death. Now, do I think it's going to go to that extreme? No, of course not. But what is it? Seriously, the question that popped into my head while putting this program together today was, what is it that the Democrats are so fearful of with this president and his possible reelection that they could possibly put the entire party's future in jeopardy and those of all their elected officials by lowering the bar of what we consider to be a removable offense? That's the question of the day. Not who the whistleblower is, not what Trump said to the Ukrainian president, not whether or not Brett Kavanaugh's fly was open, not whether or not Donald Trump was grabbing him by the P word or talking to Vlad or playing Fortnite with Kim Jong-un. The issue of the day, the question of the day, is what in the world is so concerning to the Democrat Party that they are willing to risk it all to prevent this man from gaining a second term? This is why history is important. There's something there that is not being told. There's a story that's not being exploited or explored. But at the end of the day, if you really break it down intellectually and honestly, the Democrats are stepping into waters that we've never stepped into in this country before, putting the country's future at risk, the economy at risk, your family is at risk, freedom and liberty at risk, all to reserve their own power, their own influence. No, folks. This is something which is way too pricey. If you've never heard the phrase Pyrrhic victory, it refers to a victory of one particular king, where although the king was victorious, the price of that victory was entirely too costly, and a loss would have been preferable when you consider the ultimate consequences. Would being removing Donald Trump from office be a Pyrrhic victory? At the current place we are in this country right now, we better hope it's only that bad.
Heart of America and the Michael Hart Show is brought to you in part by the Unknown America Project. Unknown America Myths and Little Known Oddities about the greatest nation on earth explores many of the falsehoods and fallacies and revisions in American history that impact the beliefs and the thoughts of many people in this country today. So if you'd like to learn some of the most enduring myths that have been perpetrated on the American public for the last 100 plus years in this country, go check out the book at heartofamerica.net. That's heartofamerica.net. And pick up a copy of Unknown America. It comes out to you absolutely no shipping. It'll be autographed, and we'll even send you a copy of the United States Constitution as our way of saying thanks. So support the Unknown America Project by simply going to theunknownamerica.com, and thank you for your support.
You hate it when your computer is running slow. Did you know that could be a sign of viruses, spyware, or Trojan horses giving hackers access to your private data? Do not let your identity be stolen. Do not let your private documents be made public. Do not let a hacker hold your family photos hostage. Do let the industry-leading security experts At Liberty One Tech, ensure that your computer and network are safe. Liberty One Tech will also help secure your online accounts to keep hackers out and make sure you never lose access. It's all free when you join the Talk Text Plus service. With Talk Text Plus, you have unlimited VIP access to expert technology help 7 days a week so that you can always make the right click. Sign up today and get the free security checkup at libertyonetech.com. That's liberty, the number one, tech.com.
Let us know. Let's get out there. We'll see what's on Clark's mind. Hello, Clark. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, Michael. You doing okay?
Pretty good.
Pretty good's good enough on a Thursday.
Yeah, it
so,
is.
So, you know, your last part of your last segment there, get out of my head, Michael, because we're asking the same exact questions. Why are the Democrats desperate enough to do this at this point in time? And I think it's a combination of things. It's not just one thing. You know, if you look at immigration, the Democrats are at the point now where they need a constant influx of people that were not born and raised in this country because their ideas are so bad for this country that they can't depend on people born and raised here to keep them in power. And Donald Trump is severely impeding their ability to get massive numbers of people here. Then you look at the federal courts and the Supreme Court justices. I mean, how long, Michael? 40 years at least that the Democrats have counted on being able to push their agenda through the courts that they can't do through legislation? Is that about right?
Yep, sounds about right.
Yeah. So Donald Trump now has two Supreme Court justices. If RBG goes down, there's three. And if he gets another term, he could get as many as two more. Wow. That messes them up for decades. But I don't think that's as big a deal as when you start looking at the federal courts. You know, Donald Trump has flipped the ninth district. You think about that. That has got to put their heads on fire, Michael. Now, put those two things together with the idea that Barr, Durham, Horowitz et al. Might actually ever file charges against somebody. Newt Gingrich summed it up yesterday. He did not elaborate, but Newt said he, Donald Trump, threatens their very existence, referring to the Democrats. And I think that's where they are right now, Michael. Are you familiar with double elimination baseball tournaments?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. You got a loss in a double elimination baseball tournament.
Yeah, you're in the loser's bracket.
You're in the loser's bracket. The only game that matters is this game. Because if you lose, you go home. And I think in their minds, that's where the Democrats are. If they do not get him out of office now, they are finished. And I don't know how far from accurate that is, but I think that's where they are in their minds.
I think that's where they are in their minds, Clark. But you know something? Let me just toss this out there, and I'm gonna venture a guess and suggest that I'm speaking for you as well, because I do think you and I were separated at birth. But you know, when Barack Obama was elected to a second term, many people on the right were like, "OMG, the world's gonna end. We've got four more years of this. How do we not get him out of office?" But guess what happened, Clark? We endured. We survived. I don't want to go all Gloria Gaynor on you, which most people won't get that reference. But, you know, we did survive. And the Democrats, I would think that they would survive as well. But I don't understand the urgency unless there's something more behind it. Because I don't know that Pence would ever run for president. Four more years of Donald Trump may very well set up a perfect plateau, you know, may very well tee up a Democrat president for, you know, four to 16 years after that. You know, they will survive Donald Trump. What is it that they're so fearful of that they're willing to, you know, change the rules and the laws of impeachment in case of redefining or expanding the meaning of high crimes and misdemeanors for the immediate future? Are they afraid if he gets reelected and he has nothing to fear that he's going to come gunning for them in a legal sense? Are they afraid that there's going to be investigations? It's got to be something that desperate. Because this whole whistleblower thing, I mean, this story, Clark, is animated. I can't even read anything related to it without hearing Keystone Cop music in the back of my head. And I just can't help but wonder that, you know, they are putting their personal political careers ahead of their own party. Because if they change the rules of impeachment just to get Donald Trump, those rules remain permanently changed. And damn, that ain't good for either side.
Kind of like, I don't know, what, killing the filibuster worked out for him, right?
Yeah.
Now, let me see your Gloria Gaynor with Veruca from Willy Wonka.
Okay.
Okay. They want it, and they want it right now. After 8 years of Barack Obama, Michael, they felt like they had arrived. We're all socialists now, and it's been snatched out from under them, and the angst is just too much. Now, I like the Gloria Gaynor reference, but let me raise you an REO Speedwagon. Take it on the run, babe. Do you remember the opening line to that song?
Yeah.
Heard it from a friend who, heard it from another you'd been messing around. That mm-hmm. is probable cause now, Michael.
That's whistleblower.
That's the whistleblower. That's where we've gotten to. Now, this current thing that they're doing, I mean, you know, in the first place, you've read the transcript, I've read the transcript. If you're listening to us, for God's sakes, read the transcript and get somebody else to read it. You know, Trump politely asked for investigations into meddling into our elections and possible corruption pertaining to the Bidens, right? He did not ask for it to be manufactured. He did not ask for preordained outcomes. And this was done in a private conversation. The president did not go around publicly bragging about how he had punked the president of a foreign country into doing something he wanted done. Maybe Joe Biden was doing that, I don't know. But President Donald Trump was not. Now, making this public has very likely damaged Joe Biden to the point where he's going to fall out of number one. But Donald Trump didn't make it public. The left made this public. And, you know, I think there's probably three things in play here. Number one, they get to damage Donald Trump. I don't think they get to get him out of office with it. I don't think they think they get to get him out of office, but they can damage him, maybe stain him, change a few voters' minds. Number two, they get Joe Biden out of the way. Joe Biden's been occupying this space for as long as he was useful. That usefulness apparently has come to its end in the minds of the DNC. This gets Biden out of the way. And it distracts from what really disturbs them about this phone call, and that's investigating CrowdStrike. Because investigations into CrowdStrike are going to reflect very, very poorly on the DNC when their involvement in this becomes known by everybody. And if you're listening to this and you don't know who CrowdStrike is, go investigate that.
I don't take exception with much of what you're saying, but I will kind of throw some light on this.
Go for it.
If it comes out, and I do realize, I don't know if, you know, there's been some speculation that this whole thing is designed to get Trump and Biden simultaneously. I don't know if that's purposeful or if Biden is just a juicy condiment on this hairball. But if it was ever found out that there was an internal effort by the DNC to purposely remove Biden, even if it's just ancillary to Trump, considering what we know about the delegate process of Bernie Sanders, how many Democrats that are paying attention anyway, and that's, I know that's very few, how many Democrats sit still for yet another example of their party usurping their desire or will to install their own preferred candidate? See, I see several tentacles here of the possible destruction and or demise of the Democrat Party, because their desperation now is, you know, to go all Oreo speedwagon on you, it's so palpable that it's not even fun for me to report on it any longer. It's just that sad. And I can't help but wonder yet again why they're willing to take such a risk to alienate that portion of their party if they're discovered, because even an attempt to impeach Trump is going to bring the Trump supporters, which, by the way, are the majority of the voters, it's going to bring Trump supporters out in mass. And you won't see and you might not see a lot of Democrats survive the House elections either. So I can't, you know, there's always been this kind of notion at the party sense, the party level, of, you know, as the party itself has to go on, it has to endure. You know, it's just like Steve Jobs with Apple. You know, Steve Jobs obviously was the main thrust behind that company, but the latter years of his life were dedicated to making certain that Apple would survive in perpetuity. Companies do that. Corporations do that. Well, parties do it as well, Clark. But in this particular sense, there seems to be a sense of finality to the way they're looking at this, as though if we don't get Trump, we will cease to exist. So we are going to pull out all the stops to prevent that from happening, which raises the question, what is the fear that could cause them to cease to exist if it's not either judicial or a violation of their own high crimes and misdemeanors or something even more egregious? There's more to, I guess, you know, I'm using a lot of words to say this. Trump derangement syndrome is off the table, at least politically. There's something deeper here. And I don't know if it's going to come out or not, but this transcends disgust. This transcends bigotry or misogyny or xenophobia. This is going into something, I won't say it's biblical, but it's got a theocratical, theological, political bent to it that I can't quite grasp, because the Democrats are running scared like I've never seen a party run scared in my entire life. And the depth to which they are willing to go demonstrates the depth to their guilt.
Oh, I couldn't agree with your thesis there more. You know, in their minds, their backs are totally against the wall. It's double or nothing, lose or leave town. Oh, and, you know, as far as they're concerned, they cannot allow Donald Trump to be reelected president, and they've just got to go for it right now. And I, you know, all I can come up with is, number one, you know, the more border wall that gets built, the more their ability to bring new voters in goes away, because, like I say, their ideas, people that are born and raised here and have some concept of America, do not vote for them in sufficient numbers. And we're getting more and more judges that, oh gosh, I don't know. They like interpret the law as it was written, or the Constitution as it was written, and they can't legislate through the courts. So I don't know. And, you know, your take on what happens if it's found out that the DNC has rigged this up to get Biden out of the way. Michael, I take what happened in 2016 as a very strong suggestion that that's what's going on now. Why would you expect the DNC to allow their voters to choose who their candidate is going to be at this point? I don't expect them to. You know, they've demonstrated that, you know, the party knows better than their voters. And so they're perfectly willing to rig things up to where the party gets who it wants. So I don't know.
Yeah, now you're channeling Maisie Hirono and her comment that people don't understand how smart we are.
Right. Yeah, Maisie's just way over my head. Hey, Michael, I got a question. Now, Biden was an emissary for Barack Hussein Obama when he went to the Ukraine and told them they would not get the $1 billion if they didn't fire the corrupt prosecutor, put quotation marks around corrupt prosecutor, because I'm not sure how the man was corrupt at this point, other than Joe Biden and Barack Obama said he was. Here's my question. When did the Barack Hussein Obama White House develop a problem with corrupt prosecutors? Because these are the people that gave us Fast and Furious Eric Holder, Faisal Lyon, Loretta Lynch. I don't know. Where did this problem with a corrupt prosecutor come from, Michael? Why didn't they have a problem with corrupt prosecutors earlier?
Because there wasn't an employment issue of Hunter Biden at stake.
Oh, okay. You know, it also occurs to me that if you become highly offended when someone inquires about the truth about a matter of possible corruption, and this is deliberately trying to damage somebody, is that a tacit admission that there was corruption?
Certainly seems to me.
It does to me. And I don't know, on what planet can somebody not see that Hunter Biden getting a $600,000 a year gig as a consultant? Now, I don't know. You know, sometimes you actually consult with consultants. But, Michael, remember when, if you were a state senator in the state of Alabama, your wife could be a consultant at a community college?
Right. Oh, yeah.
You were calling?
Oh, yeah.
Now, how was that anything but an extra $50,000 a year for a state senator? How can anybody not understand that that was just a little payoff there from the state community colleges to state legislatures or legislators? How can anybody not understand that, you know, Hunter Biden didn't provide any services? He certainly didn't tell them how to run their company. And yet he got $600,000 a year. I don't know. Kind of reminds me of the whole Solyndra thing. You know, if you bundle enough money and donate it to the president, we'll give you that much money times 10 back, but it'll be taxpayer dollars.
Exactly right.
So I don't know. This whole deal, you know, pull up REO Speedwagon, take it on the run. That needs to be the theme song for this whole deal right here. Oh, I swear, what a mess. The risk is worth it. I do not recall which Democrat said that. And when he said that, I thought, the risk is worth it. That's because y'all think your backs are that much against the wall.
That's exactly right.
Michael, you
got
Mike on directly?
That's the plan.
All right. Well, I'm going to go get started on the next thing and wait for y'all to talk. Well, I mean, I'll be listening to you in the meantime. But anyway, have fun with it. And you going to be on the air tomorrow?
That's the plan. Finally getting ahead of some of these deadlines.
All right, man. Will you take care?
All right,
I appreciate
Clark.
The time.
Thanks, Clark. Right. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye. In any sense of business, anything that's business-related, there is obviously risk versus reward. And in this particular case, the risk-reward factor is simply not there. And that's kind of what Clark is speaking to. There is something which simply does not make sense of this on any single level. But again, going back to the writings, as we talked about earlier, William Blackstone, and how high crimes and misdemeanors throughout history have been redefined to fit the common narrative of the day, Because at the end of the day, you know, Donald Trump, you know, even if he gets reelected, you got 6 more years of him. 6 years. We endured 8 years of Obama. We got through it. I wasn't happy about it. My stock portfolio responded negatively. My portfolio to the degree that it exists. But this too shall pass. Because you want to know something else from a impeachment perspective, and got some other callers calling in. You'll hang tight. We'll get to you for the top of the hour. There's almost no time to pull this off successfully before 2020. And there's a lot of people that are putting their seats at risk in the House of Representatives. Every single seat in the House is up. I would think, and if people really understand the formation of government, if the Democrats held on to the House and were able to regain the Senate, they, for all intent and purposes, have neutralized Donald Trump's agenda. This is a big risk. And the risk, obviously, being the downside, does not match the potential upside. Unless there's something more. And I think there is something considerably more than what we're being told. Going to take a real quick break here in just a moment. Got a couple of calls calling in, so I want to get these guys out of the way, give you an opportunity to chime in here as we make way for Megan Barth of ReaganBabe.com. Welcome into the program. Who are we speaking with?
It's Bianca, Hart.
Hey, buddy, how are you?
About one of the only conservative shows that can come on undisrupted. There's two others. They have all sorts of problems. One this morning, Greg Pincus. But, you know, it's a good analogy that the DNC is trying to eliminate Joe Biden. Real good analogy. All the other candidates seem like they are not going in place. Warren is still trying to make her noise, but that's a good analogy. But let me ask you something. Have you seen any of these caps that say "Make America Mexico Again"?
I have not.
Yeah, they got those out there now. And then when you look at the incident that went on in Colorado at the ICE facility, where the person took down the American flag and hoisted up the Mexican flag, you know, this whole idea about the possibility of getting enough people in a state where this state can go through a secession process is beginning to shape up, it looks like to me. And what would happen? What would it be if that did happen? Well, then, of course, they could request that a foreign government put military there in that territory in order to protect them. You know, back in World War One, that Germany offered to help Mexico with weapons and so on, promised that it would help it get back the lost territory that it lost for having access to Mexican oil. So I still think that animosity still lives, and I think that there may be an underlying plan amongst a whole others. Surely there's an underlying plan to destroy the fabric of the United States. We can see that being played out. But there's a lot of things going on.
Yes, there are. There absolutely are.
Yeah. But anyway, I'll let you get back to your program. I just wanted to make that comment.
Well, I appreciate you calling in, buddy. I really do.
Thank you.
All right, you take care. Yeah, there's a whole bunch going on. And I realize, you know, I think sometimes, and let's just make this quick analogy, and then we'll get ready for Megan. And it's kind of rude. I apologize for the analogy. It just kind of popped in my head. But it's kind of like you pick up your husband or your wife's cell phone, and there's an unidentified text from an unidentified person. Maybe it's not necessarily explicit, but it's obviously a little flirtatious. And you put the phone down, and you never look at it again, because you don't want to know if there's anything else. currently in your world, whatever your world might look like, everything is copacetic. You got a good job, you got a house, maybe some kids, dinner's ready, you got vacations, nice cars, etc. You don't want to And I think it's important for people to really appreciate that there are people in this country that do not want to know the truth, that cannot handle the truth, that are concerned that they learn something that they are not intellectually or emotionally prepared to deal with. Good analogy? I don't know. Perhaps. But I do think that there are a lot of people in this country that are very comfortable where they currently are, that don't necessarily have any desire whatsoever to go any deeper or further into this because they're fearful that it might impact or upset their current status, their job, their lifestyle, whatever the case may be. And that's almost understandable. It's not praiseworthy, but it's almost understandable. Because we have too many people in this country that are simply not paying attention to what's going on in the world around them. And I fear, because they fear, that there's going to be some kind of an issue. Going to take a real quick break, reset this puppy, having a few technological difficulties. And I appreciate the text messages that have come in. Hopefully we'll get that worked out by the time Megan Barth comes in. You guys are listening to The Michael Hart Show right here on the Heart of America Talk Radio Network. Stick around. We're coming right back on the other side. And hopefully the technology will correct and the Megan will call in.
Report, the magazine for the American landowner, is a proud supporter of The Michael Hart Show. Currently, they're offering an exclusive subscription price for listeners of The Michael Hart Show. So click on the subscribe button on landreport.com and enter the code HARTSHOW at checkout and receive a one-year discount on America's number one land magazine. You'll get a full year of The Land Report, which normally goes for $59, for only $15. That's a 75% savings off the cover price. Again, that's promo code HARTSHOW at checkout of thelandreport.com, and make sure to check out The Land Report on Facebook if you love land.
Anyone can tell you the news.
We welcome Diamond and Silk.
Mark Zuckerberg will end up and it's going to be a face without the book.
Without the face.
Hey, Megan, how are you?
Now they're chipping away at the normalization of pedophilia, and the left is embracing this type of behavior.
We welcome Dinesh D'Souza.
I know I ticked him off.
In a certain sense, it's a giant up yours to Obama, and that's why the left is freaking out over it.
Jack Kennedy and LBJ, Clinton, and the double standard from the left.
Yeah, I love how the left does nothing but push the most bizarre practices down our throats and up our tailpipes.
It takes a real man to tackle the hot issues that really matter.
Michael Hart is the man of this house.
Welcome to The Michael Hart Show.
Day of September 2019. That means it's our weekly speed date with none other than Megan Barth of ReaganBabe.com. This is the Of High Crimes and Misdemeanors edition of the program, as we have been discussing the Democrats' need to redefine or expand the meaning of that. Take a look all the way back to 1386 when the term was first used, all the way up to the writings of William Blackstone, who was the jurist that penned much of the commentaries on what would become the American judicial system and the fact that high crimes and misdemeanors can be employed to use basically anything. But in the current state of political affairs in this country, how far are the Democrats willing to go to attempt to get this president on the term high crimes and misdemeanors, as they will be easily setting a legal precedent that could be used against them for years to come? That's the kind of stuff we love to get into on this program, as well as our delightful visits each and every week with Megan Barth of ReaganBabe.com. Good morning, Megan. How are you?
Oh, just dandy. How are you doing, Michael?
I guess I'm double dandy because I'm just having so much fun looking at Adam Schiff and whistleblowers and just watching the Democrats spin violently out of control. What do you make about this current round?
Well, I think you had mentioned, if I heard you correctly in your opening, that, you know, how far are the Democrats willing to go? Well, they're obviously willing to go as far as to overthrow the results of the 2016 election by forceful removal of this president through the impeachment process based on a quote-unquote whistleblower. It's interesting how many machinations and political linguistics we've had to go through over the past 2 to 3 years now. First, we were told that Trump was a Russian spy. We were supposed to believe that narrative. That narrative was carried out for close to 2 years, I believe, spent $40 million on a special counsel investigation, which proved, as a matter of fact, he's not a Russian spy, but the press and the Democrats wanted us to believe that. Adam Schiff told us that he had irrefutable evidence that the president was a Russian spy. Where's that evidence? We haven't seen that evidence. I'd like to know. Then a prostitute or a stripper, whatever she is, Stormy Daniels, was supposed to take down the president because there were campaign finance violations related to this president. Well, that didn't really work out either. It turns out that her lawyer is actually a criminal. Then we were supposed to believe, the Russian, and then it was Stormy Daniels. Oh, yep. Then we were supposed to believe that the president violated the emoluments clause. That was supposed to be for his removal. Well, that we didn't find that either. Now we're supposed to believe that a hearsay document. This is not a whistleblower complaint. This is a person who has no firsthand knowledge of this conversation that occurred. We then are given another conversation between a president and a foreign leader. This is the third time that private communications between world leaders and our president has been compromised for the Democrat Party. They released the transcript of a private conversation, which shows there was no quid pro quo. Oh, let me back up. Then we were told there was quid pro quo between the president and the Ukrainian president. We get the document. There's no quid pro quo. Well, now we're told to believe that the entire intelligence operation surrounding the president that records these conversations were not recorded correctly, and now he's hiding something. We're supposed to believe this now. The American people aren't this stupid. Because if you look at how the president, the RNC, has raised money in the last 48 hours since this you know, story broke, they've raised, I think, $7 million in small donations, which means that the American people are paying attention, and they're not going to be continually led by the nose by a party who wants to overthrow the 2016 election. And instead of just waiting another year, I mean, we don't need to go through this whole impeachment process, which just destroys the fabric of our country, destroys the institutions of our country, and destroys the presidency. They don't want to wait a year. So what they're going to do is create political theater like we're witnessing today as the acting DNI testifies on the quote-unquote whistleblower complaint. They don't want to wait for the election because they know they'll lose. They don't have an agenda. They don't have an agenda that's saleable. They want to run Elizabeth Warren. By all means, don't let me get in the way of that train wreck. So Joe Biden's going to be taken down, and I think this is part of the Democrats' plan. He's going to be the sacrificial lamb. because he's not going to win. He doesn't have the temerity. He does not have strength to make it through for another year. He's gaff-tastic, always has been. So now their darling is Elizabeth Warren, but the darling Elizabeth Warren has always been the darling of the Marxist, communist, socialist left. And that's what we're dealing with here. My great-grandfather, my grandfather, my father, my uncles all fought against communists. And so it's just another day of fighting the communists that have infiltrated the Democrat Party as well as our national security agencies and our intelligence agencies. You think maybe John Brennan planted a few of his comrades within the deep state? The Republicans were that stupid. The Republicans had no idea who the enemy was. And when you don't know the enemy, you're going to lose the war. And here we have John Brennan, who just skated past the nomination process when he actually voted for a communist. So this is what we're dealing with.
Yeah, where's Joe McCarthy when you need him? You know, I've often been curious because it's obvious, and Trump made some very heartfelt and direct comments yesterday about, you know, the witch hunt, what's going on in the country, how it undermines the security of the country, et cetera. I understand that the Democrats are desperate, Megan. I get that. I also understand that there's a level of desperation there that, you know, I said earlier today, I'm taking Trump derangement syndrome off the table. It's much more nefarious than that. There's something, this is not just derangement. This is people that are genuinely desperate about their future. But knowing that they may or may not have the support in the House, but they don't have it in the Senate, what is the purpose? I understand getting Trump out of the way because they can't beat him in 2020. I understand taking Biden out with the bathwater because he can't win in 2020. But this president is virtually non-impeachable. Polls are showing that his support's going up, although it's not significant. But they're also showing that people don't want this. You know, the funny thing is, if it goes back to gun control and new gun legislation, man, that pales in terms of interest to the American public behind immigration, pardon me, and health care. The Democrats, they don't seem to understand that, you know, as leadership, that they don't represent the vast majority of the country. They can't get this guy out of office vis-a-vis the Senate. They, you know, you've got every single House of Representative district up for re-election this year. And the exposure that they're creating to their most vulnerable House members, what the hell? They can't win this battle, so why are they fighting it?
Well, they're fighting it out of desperation. They're fighting it because they know they have a complicit media in their back pocket that will run with stories that aren't based in fact, but rather based in hearsay, like this quote-unquote whistleblower complaint, and also just based on headlines. And so if they publish the headline that's a saboteurial headline, they don't have to print the retraction. And if they do print the retraction, it will be days later, and the American people will be led to believe and manipulated to believe something that's not true. I mean, this is 101 communist propaganda. So the Democrats believe that because they can, you know, this hearing that we're witnessing today should not be a public hearing. You know, this should be handled when whistleblowers come forward. It's handled kind of in private, and then they work it out, and they don't drag the head of the DNI, you know, in front of the country. But here we go. It's nothing but optics. It is all optics in order to mislead and misinform the American people. And what they want to do is they saw, President Trump has a 53% approval rating. Well, how can we get that down into the 40s? This has nothing to do with helping the American people. This has nothing to do with restoring our country. Because why would you want to restore our country, otherwise make America great again, when you believe in the fundamental transformation of the country? If Hillary Clinton had won, we would not know of all of the corruption that had infiltrated the top intelligence agencies and security agencies in our country. And really the question I have from this political theater
is who's spying on the president? Who needs to be tried for treason? Which one of Barack Obama's comrades or John Brennan's comrades or Hillary Clinton's comrades are seated in a position within the intelligence agencies that are listening to the president and his private conversations with world leaders and then sharing that information with some anonymous, quote-unquote, whistleblower based on hearsay evidence? We are now through this political circus. So that's the question I have. Who's the spy? Who's the communist spy? Who's the resistor, the resistance that is spying on our president, compromising national security? We probably won't find out because this has been an active role of the Democrat Party long before Barack Obama. I mean, let's not forget the lion of the Senate, Ted Kennedy. Ted Kennedy was working with the Russians behind Reagan's back. Hillary Clinton was working with the Russians when we were told that President Trump was working with the Russians. Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton were working with the Ukrainians when we're told now that, you know, President Trump is basically shaking down the Ukrainians. So it's all the old Alinsky tactic. Accuse others what you're guilty of doing.
Yeah, I've actually made that observation a couple of times myself, and I don't know how effective in terms of 2020 any of this is going to be. And, you know, I raised the question also to one of my previous callers that if it's discovered that Joe Biden is in part a target of this particular debacle, then it's really more an attempt to get Elizabeth Warren in, which is a joke on so many levels. How many Democrats, Megan, can sit still for knowing that their party and everything that they supposedly believed in is being robbed from them? You know, their political birthright, if you will, if the Democrats, whether it's via superdelegates or just the ouster of a potential candidate, you know, even if Biden's not popular, just the inside machinations, as you point out, the inside machinations of a political party that's looking to usurp the process. I mean, are Democrats, in terms of the voters, are they just that far removed from reality?
Well, I think they're drunk on their own power, and when you lie long enough, you start to believe your own BS. But the party has been hijacked. The Democrat Party has been hijacked by communists, socialists, and Marxists. And there's always been a totalitarian streak within the Democrat Party. They always find a home. I mean, why is it that a communist finds a home in the Democrat Party? How is it that an anti-Semite finds a home in the Democrat Party? How is it that a Marxist or a socialist finds a home in the Democrat Party? That's because that's where they're welcome and that's where they find a home. So that's what we're up against. So, you know, those that call themselves Democrats, well, what's a moderate Democrat? What's a moderate Democrat to a socialist? What's a moderate socialist? And so this is what we're up against, like I said, since the beginning of time. Okay, in my familial history, we've always been fighting communists. But then we were led by the nose of the party by the likes of John McCain and George Bush, who wanted to reach across the aisles and get things done with his friends across the aisles. Well, how do you get things done and shake the hand of your enemy when your enemy has put a knife in your back and in the American people's back? So we were led by the nose for decades, right, since pretty much Ronald Reagan. The Republican Party went adrift, and it became the party of crony capitalism and government. And when you have big government and crony capitalism, that is the root for corruption. That is necessary, not only the root of corruption, but it feeds the corruption. It centralizes the power. And wherever you find centralized power, you're going to find corruption. And so the Democrats aren't stupid. Okay, they want the political theater. They want the optics for the next 14 months. They want the president just to have impeachment on his record so he can be, what, the third president or something like that in the history of the country with the impeachment stain on his record. They know it's not going to go anywhere in the Senate. But then again, this is just a political game for them. And they want to make sure that the president has this bruise and this mark and all of this political theater and all of this sabotage and defamation and libel associated with his presidency.
Well, considering that every seat in the House is up in 2020, can they even get it through the House?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we were told by Nancy Pelosi this week, I believe it was on Tuesday, that she is starting formal inquiry or impeachment proceedings. What does that mean? I have to wear a tux or some sequins? I mean, is this a ball that I have to go to? What is a formal impeachment inquiry? We've been in an impeachment inquiry since the president was seated and sworn into office. So I don't know what she means by formal impeachment inquiry. That's a new one to me. If she had the votes, she would have done the process by which has always historically been done by the House of Representatives. You take it to a vote, you do all that. Can she get the votes? Sure, probably, because where is the money? Follow the money. The money is behind the impeachment hysteria. Impeach Brett Kavanaugh was last week, okay? I mean, it was just last week they wanted to impeach Brett Kavanaugh. Now they want to impeach this president. They've always wanted to impeach this president. So, you know, some that are running for re-election, if they don't get on the impeachment bandwagon, they're not going to get the money.
Yeah, but is the money going to be enough to justify it? Because if there are, you know, especially like Pennsylvania, for example, where, you know, Trump might not be woefully popular, but people need to realize, you know, even here in the state of Alabama, you know, as conservative as we are, we have certain districts that are blue. And I just can't help but think that there are certain districts out there that do have Democrats that might have enough of a red constituency to them that, depending upon the polling day turnout, they could find those seats in jeopardy, particularly if they're coming, you know, if you're getting support out of other districts from within any given state in terms of financial support or just, you know, even door knocking for that matter. I don't know how I can't get my head around it. And I'm pretty astute on this stuff. But it seems like, you know, there are certain things, because let's face facts here. Impeachment's going to potentially damage the economy. It's going to panic Wall Street. It's going to embolden our enemies. It's going to give Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong-un something to smile about, let alone the Chinese. It has, for the country as a whole, it has zero upside. And, you know, we saw the same thing with Clinton. We saw it with Andrew Johnson, and it looks like we might be looking at it again with Trump. And I understand nothing more than Mustaine, but in my opinion, the successful impeachment of Donald Trump, from what I see, what I witness, what I read, almost assures his reelection. And from what the barbs that he has suffered, makes me wonder if whether or not he would almost wear an impeachment with a badge of honor, as though that was his purple heart for draining the swamp, or at least attempting to do so. So there's so many tentacles to this, but there is a narcissism that's accompanied with a naivete, from my perspective, from the Democrats, that what they're grappling with here has major backfire potential.
Well, I don't disagree with you, and I think Nancy Pelosi is being strong-armed by the communist left that she and the DNC has supported in their election across the country. So, you know, she's maybe it's her age, I don't know. But like I said, this is all about political theater. This isn't about the good for the country. If the Democrats were on behalf if the Democrats cared about the good of the country, we wouldn't have been going through what we've been through in the last 2.5 years. We might actually have a trade agreement signed replacing NAFTA. We might have lower prescription drug costs. We might have a strong border. We don't really have any of that because the Democrats are more concerned with regaining power and taking over control of the executive branch than they are working on behalf of the country and the American people. Like I said, the Democrats don't love this country. They certainly don't love the Constitution. I love when they find the Constitution and start talking about protecting the country and the Constitution and, you know, no one's above the law. Well, if no one's above the law, why is Hillary Clinton walking around? If no one's above the law, why do we have sanctuary cities and counties in Democrat counties and cities? So this is just all a ruse. That's all this is. They're despicable people. Cory Booker calls me despicable. Now, we went from deplorables to despicables, by the way. Do you know that?
I was actually unaware.
Yes, yes, yes. Cory Booker referred to us deplorables as despicable. So now we're the despicables. Cory Booker speaks on behalf of the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party doesn't like 63 million people in this country and want to overturn their votes. They keep saying, oh, well, we won the popular vote. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. Well, guess what? California has to remove 2 million voters from their voter registration rolls. And so Hillary Clinton likely didn't win the popular vote because without 2 million voters, she wouldn't win jack. So the Democrats have, as Lindsey Graham reminded us during the Kavanaugh hearings, which brings me to my next point, well, he had hoped that they never gain an ounce of power again. God help us. And those are some prophetic words from Lindsey Graham. God help us. And God help this president and God save this country, because really that's the only person that can do it. Because the Democrats are tearing down every institution of government in order to gain power. And that's what all totalitarians do.
Right. No, you're exactly right about that, as always. Well, it's going to be very interesting to see what plays out over the course of the next several days. You know, I don't know if we're ever going to learn who the whistleblower is. I mean, I don't understand where we've got to in this country, Megan, where we can level these accusations without the benefit of knowing who this person is, whether they're a spy, whether or not the whistleblower, quote unquote, even exists. You know, so I'm hoping that now we've gotten to this place in the national political discourse that once we realize that this too is folly, do you think we'll ever put this behind us? Because it seems to me, outside of political circles, particularly outside of media circles such as you and I and others, it seems to me that with each allegation, whether it's leveled against this guy or leveled against Kavanaugh or whatever, the public becomes less and less interested and more weary of it. It can't possibly be having the positive effect. Is this the possibility? Once this is outed for the ruse that it is it possible that this is the last attempt at this, or are we going to have this ad nauseum all the way through the entire year?
We're going to have it through the entire year, and we're also going to have it throughout 2024 unless we take the House back. I mean, look what the Democrats have done by just having the power of the purse, by taking the House. And all the suburban women out there and all the soccer moms out there that gave Democrats the win in 2018 to really pat themselves on the back. Way to go, women. Way to go.
Yeah.
So imagine if they had the Senate, which they won't have.
I don't need that nightmare. I don't need that thought in my head. Megan,
yeah,
knock it out of the park as always. No, it's not.
Thank you.
Not.
Yeah,
have the listeners. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I didn't want to. I just said buckle up, Buttercup, because we're on for a bumpy ride. It's going to get bumpy.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said before, for somebody that does what I do for a living, it's good for business. And I know it certainly is not something that, you know, from your ability to be able to get out there and knock it out of the park, because I know I'm not naive enough to know that there's not another Michael Hart out there somewhere, or two, or 22. And I know you're just unbelievably popular because of your amazing insights. And I want people to learn as much as they possibly can about you. So tell us where we can find more about Megan Barth, all the signing up stuff.
ReaganBabe.com. That's Reagan as in Ronald, Babe as in Ruth. ReaganBabe.com. They can go to my website every day. I've been called the female drudge now, and I'll take it. I'll wear that hat, no problem. But because I do so many shows across the country like yours, I talk about a lot of different things. And so what I do is I just, all my research that I do and all the articles, I just post to my website. So it's a daily news feed. They can sign up for my newsletter, which comes out every Saturday morning. A lot of radio hosts are using it for their own show prep, which is great. ReaganBabe.com. That's where they can find me.
Excellent. Megan, thank you so very much. We'll definitely do it again next week, and I appreciate you popping by today.
Anytime, Michael. Thank you.
Thanks, Megan.
Okay.
All right, guys, let's wrap this thing up. Check us out online, heartofamerica.net, heartofamerica.net. If you like what we're doing here on the Michael Hart Show, on the Michael Hart Broadcasting Network, please consider going over to the Patreon link, and you can find it right there at Hart, H-A-R-T, heartofamerica.net. We'd be so appreciative of your contribution of $6.95 or more for a month, and you can cancel any time, by the way. We'll even send you out a copy of the book, Unknown America, absolutely free of charge. We even pay for the shipping, even send you a copy of the Constitution with it. It's crazy stuff. So go check that out, because we are trying to spread the word about what's going on in this country as much as we possibly can. We do realize that you have options when it comes to your news sources, which is why we'd like to get as deep into them as we possibly can, because we do believe that the writings of William Blackstone and others are fundamental to understanding what's going on in this country today and the desperation of the Democrat Party. If you agree, please consider sharing the program, downloading the program, telling people about the program, and supporting the program with your pocketbook if that is possible. Thanks again. We appreciate it so very much. You've been listening to the Michael Hart Show right here on the Heart of America Talk Radio Network. You know what they say. Until next time.